What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
A rip-roaring rally on Wall Street as the wild market swings continue. Welcome to Fast Money, everybody. Another big night for you. I'm Brian, and your traders tonight are Tim, Steve, Dan, and Guy. All right, look at this move, 1,100 points. Call it the Biden bounce, the stimulus surge, whatever you want to call it another monster day for investors. The Dow surging 4.5%. That is more than 1,100 points. And by the way, the second biggest point game ever. Of course, the biggest was only on Monday. With this move higher, the NASDAQ also turning positive for the year. And all 11 sectors finishing firmly in the green on the S&P 500. But hey, don't look now. Because over there in the bond market, yields, they're still trading near all-time lows. The 10-year rose a little bit, but it's at 1.06%. Yesterday, of course, below 1%. So we're going to do something a little bit different at the top tonight. Everybody ready?
Go.
All right.
Let's do it, Brian.
We are going to go around the table, and I want each of you to give our viewers a simple answer to a simple question. Starting with you, Guy Adami.
Yes, sir.
Why were we up 1,100 points today?
The short answer is I have no idea, Brian. But
Thank you for asking
me to guess, listen, I think Joe Biden had a lot to do with it. I think you brought that up. I mean, maybe in retrospect, this global central bank nonsense or lunacy sort of kicked in. Maybe we were in an oversold condition. But I got to tell you, last night sitting here at the same time, I thought given that close with the Fed news, we'd absolutely retest that 2,900 level. Clearly, that didn't happen today. With that said, you know, the VIX is still north of 30. I'd love to say all clear. I'm not ready to say it yet.
Dan, why are we up today?
Yeah, the VIX doesn't really concern me much. I think rates, you mentioned, you know, while we're still at the lows here, I think a little stabilization. I think that 0.999 thing below the 1% on the 10-year got people's attention here. So, you know, at the end of the day, I think earlier when we were talking, you know, small caps were underperforming this morning. I mean, everything caught a bit. Everything caught a bit, and I think rate stabilizing is probably a good thing. And I think there's very few people out there who really want to see things come unhinged here. So the fact that the Fed did what they did, and then there was a little volatility after that, but finally a little bit of a bottom.
Right. I think it was the $50 billion in IMF making it available to fight it. $8 billion here to fight it. And basically socialism has taken a rear seat or back seat. So hence Biden, those three things, I think, were the major things why the market rallied.
I just think it was positioning, Brian. I think, you know, we were so oversold that, you know, a couple days here, plus five, minus five, plus five, you know, whatever, gets you to a place where still a good part of the market is really struggling to kind of hold above the 200-day. The S&P did a nice job with that. The triple Qs actually have a little bit more room to plumb. But if you look underneath the surface, there are certainly parts of this market that really haven't rallied at all. And we've talked about the Treasury bond yield. You can also say that the short end of the curve is actually held the distress levels of 2 days ago. Tells you that the Fed's got to move more. We won't get into that because we probably will get into that. But I'd rather talk about how transports, retail, and banks are basically not catching a bid. And that's telling you something about the economy. It's telling you about the cyclicality of whatever this rally is. There's no question that the complacency to me that accompanies and has been a part of central banks being a part of our lives for every day since 2008 is part of the reason why the market remains. I know even with the 30 VIX, whatever, it's somewhat complacent. The bears have not really crept up. Yeah. Mike Santoli does a nice job. Santoli talked about the bull bear indicators, the AAII. Bears haven't really gotten that nasty yet. It's just that the bulls have pulled back a hair, and I don't think that's very healthy.
I think that the bottom line, though, you start off the show saying why. And I think the fact that we're going to have...
You know why I asked that?
Why?
Because I also have no idea.
Well,
I usually have a sniff of an idea.
Market. Everyone's going to have a different idea.
Two 1,100-point gains in 3 days.
So you did have the airline CEOs in the White House. Those were the first ones to take off today. That was that last leg higher in the overall market. So when you watch those two things happen, everyone wants to jump on board because they think there's a bottom forming. And that's what I think you saw today.
It's interesting. And Steve mentions a $50 billion, and he's right. But how much money, you know, schools are, this is not me speaking out of school. Schools are closing. People are not traveling. I have conferences I'm supposed to go to that have been canceled. It's not just me. So, again, I don't know that money is the cure for this. Now, the market might think so, but I do think, and I'm not trying to be hyperbolic here, but I do think more bad news is in store in terms of what it means fiscally to this country.
Yeah, but I think fiscally is the most important word that you just used there, because this is really not a health crisis. It's turned into a financial crisis. That's really what's going on here. If you think about just the toll of just contaminated people and how many people are dying, and even if it's a 3.4% mortality rate, we're talking about tiny numbers on a planet of 7 billion people. So to me, the issue really is, and we talked a lot about this last night because we were talking about what does the 50 basis point cut really mean. What it means is, in to Steve's point, you got the IMF, everybody's getting on board here, and at least you have a backstop initially for what is a brewing financial crisis.
But I think you're right. This is not about the death toll, because I think no matter how you slice it, we're going to find out more people have it and more people are asymptomatic.
Yeah,
so that's going to create more people.
Again, we're not doctors. It's just about the shutting down
the economy. I'm just following the facts. I'm following it like every other market participant. So it is having an effect on the overall economy. That's the bad side of it. But what happens is when people sit there and trade, they trade like this was Ebola. They trade like this was the Black Plague. And it's not either one of
those. Hold on, but I want to go back to what you said earlier, Steve. I could say today was the Biden bounce, if you want to call it that, because of what happened last night. But that wouldn't explain Monday.
Nobody
expected this kind of result last night.
I'll tell you, can I help out? Not that Steve isn't doing just fine. What I would like to say is, I think you have a case here where, first of all, would the Fed pull back this accommodation if coronavirus was solved tomorrow? No. And that's the scary thing, but that's exactly what the market loves. So you want to know why the market at least has found some ability to kind of, find some middle ground. And I don't think equities get away from us here. I think you have a dynamic where we are dealing with the reality of slower growth. And it's not recession. It's slower growth and it's lower earnings, whatever happens to the economy. But you can't tell me we don't come out of this in a world where there's more challenges to global growth. And I realize every central bank, possibly every government, although we don't know, are going to be throwing whatever they can at it.
Yeah, but you know, it's really interesting. I was watching the halftime report today, and there was two strategists tripping on over each other to kind of one up the other's 3,400 target in the S&P 500. And the equation was, well, if I'm trying to get to four, it could be 8 minus 4 gets me to four. They were talking about how the back half of this thing is going to be loaded, and that's how we get back up to the prior highs in the S&P 500. I just don't see it. I don't know how, if you think about last year, consensus for S&P earnings was about 177 or 178. It's going to come in at 163 or 164 for 2019. This year was the same thing. Yeah. They were expecting 177. There's no way that happens. So if you're telling me that we're going to have, I know, but if you're telling me that we're going to have the second year of multiple expansion, given to all the issues that you say that we have as far as headwinds to growth, it just can't be the Fed that does it on the way to 0% interest rates.
We're still down. The NASDAQ is up year to date with today's move, but the Dow is, I think, still down 5 or 6%. It's not like we've had a good 2020 from a market.
We're 2 months, respectfully. I mean, this is March, whatever it is. So
you don't need to do it respectfully. We just go out.
Non-respectfully. Disrespectfully. But to your point, I mean, this market was, in my opinion, was on extraordinarily shaky ground before anybody heard the term coronavirus. Yields were going lower. Gold was going higher. We had no earnings growth. All we had was multiple expansion. What has changed on that front? Nothing. Yep. And then you've added this unknown and earnings. You're not going to see earnings growth this year. So you want to play the multiple expansion game? That's fine.
I think you're looking for a reason to sell off. And it wasn't going to sell off on trade. It wasn't going to sell off on anything on Iran. It wasn't going to sell off on anything else. It picked this because it said we have no clue how to analyze this virus. So let's sell
first. And yet
first.
We went up 1,100 points today and 1,100 points on Monday.
A lot of it was positioning.
And we're down 700.
You got
down
last Friday.
The day before.
Yeah, and down
last Friday you had the month end. So you had $30 billion coming into equities, and now you're going to have that residual effect today, this week, and whatnot. But if you take off Bernie Sanders, as we started the show, that lets people breathe a whole lot easier when it
he's not off. By the way, let's bring another voice. Let's bring another voice. Okay, the market, unlike us, or me anyway, was in a pretty calm ride for most of last year. We had solid gains in 2019. We had almost no big down days. And this year started kind of the same. Look at that chart. Then February 20th hit. And so did the volatility. Multi-hundred point down days, a big losing streak of more than a week, then a 1,000-point gain on Monday, a drop yesterday, and another 1,000-point gain today. Got a good stat put on the Twitter from Trading Nation guest Eddie Elfenbein. This was the S&P 500's third daily move of up or down 4% in the last week. In the 8 years before that, there were two total. Three in a week, two in the previous 8 years. Let's talk more about the big market swings, maybe how you can navigate them. Joining us is Amanda Agate, PNC Financial's chief market strategist. No doubt listening to his talk and thinking, I want to jump in and say, Amanda, what?
Well, I definitely agree with the move today being largely a function of, as you said, the Biden bounce. You know, we had been coming into this year talking a lot with our clients about the volatility around the 2020 election. And so the prospect of a Sanders versus Trump election became really real just in the last few weeks with some key wins out of primary states for Sanders. And so I think the market really started to wrestle with that becoming a reality. It was very much an underappreciated risk from our perspective. And so to the extent that Biden had this really strong win and resurgence and strength last night, you know, with basically taking the South and the big win in Texas, of course the markets are going to breathe a collective sigh of relief. You know, if you think about Trump versus Sanders, that's a really, really polarizing election season. We have two candidates at the opposite ends of the spectrum. And last time I checked, you can't, you know, average the two and get to a moderate outcome. So markets hate uncertainty. And I think this just really injected a lot of uncertainty into the equation.
And I guess, and Amanda,
you
know, I don't want to make
you. How do you price this outcome?
I don't want to make you a political analyst because these days nobody wants that, I'm sure. But I will ask this. We'll ask this. First off, well, Sanders is not out. I mean, he hasn't dropped out. He's still got a lot of delegates, and there's still a very much a path forward for him. So he being there still exists. But is it because Sanders at least lost a bit last night, or is it the market saying that Trump could beat Biden more, or if that Biden wins, it's not going to be that different from what we have now?
Yeah, well, it's definitely going to be a two-person sprint to the finish. So we're not counting out Sanders by any means, but kind of felt like Biden basically didn't have a shot, you know, in the weeks or so leading up to this. And so to really come from behind at the 11th hour with the base consolidating around him was pretty significant in terms of a sentiment-related shift. I think at the end of the day, the market can very much live with a Trump versus Biden election. As you said, it's going to be more of the same out of the current administration, or in the case of Biden, just a more moderate approach to policy. And the big rally we had today in healthcare sector, very reflective of that potential outcome.
Hey, Amanda, can you weigh in a little bit on this valuation for the S&P 500 debate? You know, obviously last year we were just talking about it, multiple expansion. This year, the likelihood of high single digits earnings growth doesn't seem particularly likely. But even if there is just given a mulligan or there's an asterisk next to 2020 EPS, where should this market be trading, excluding politics and excluding the black swan of the coronavirus?
Well, actually, so on a forward PE basis, we've seen the S&P 500 drop a couple of multiple points just in the last few weeks. So we were at cycle highs from a forward PE valuation perspective. Frankly, you know, we said coming into this year that that is reasonable, elevated, but not extreme, given the fact that we have very low rates, very low inflation, and a cyclically improving backdrop. So earnings growth looked like it was building momentum coming into 2020. Even economic growth and J.P. Morgan's global manufacturing PMI index, you know, posted 5 months of expansion or moved into expansionary territory just recently. And so there was this really buildup and potential acceleration, largely a function in our view of all the stimulus that came into the system last year. So at 19 times PE, I mean, you can't pound the table and say, oh, the market is cheap here. But we did feel like valuations were, you know, somewhat justified based on the backdrop. two multiple points cheaper. I mean, we'll take it. But again, we're not really in a cheap place. We're more like fairly valued, I would say, on the S&P.
Hey, man, it's Tim. Thanks for joining us. So in terms of pounding the table, clearly table pounding in the equity market today and absolutely running away from the table. In other words, people loving the bond market in a way that implies the economy's not so good. Well, who's right?
Totally divergent. I just think it's insane that we continue to see these massive flows into fixed income investments. I mean, the tailwinds, of course, we got this nice shot in the arm from an emergency rate cut yesterday, but the tailwinds from massive rate cuts over the last, 12 plus months and even spreads tightening, I think, really set the stage for strong bond market performance that we just don't think is repeatable to the same degree this year. And so, as much as it pains me to say that I think the bond market is actually right at the moment, because I'm very much an equity girl at heart, I do think the bond market is telling us kind of the right story here. This is not 2008. The credit markets are not frozen. The 2-year to 10-year portion of the yield curve has steepened. Even before the Fed took action yesterday, it was already steepening. And so that to me is signaling that this is a short-term speed bump. Yeah. As it relates to growth, it's not a permanent impairment.
Right,
and I
Amanda,
know you're going to say, oh, well, the 10-year is at, 1%. But, the Fed rate cut yesterday, huge gravitational pull, and then the negative yielding debt around the globe. It's also creating a lot of distortions and kind of, mucking up the signal, if you will, in terms of rates.
Well said. I couldn't have said it better, Amanda. Got to PNC Amanda. We'll get you back anytime. Thank you very much. It's and smart people reminding me that Biden won on Saturday, and so Monday may have been more likely of sort of a Biden bounce again, which by the way is interesting because we've been talking so much about the coronavirus, guys. Anybody just jump in, which leads me to think that maybe the slide that we had was more politically based than we blamed it all on Corona. Look out for Rosie because she's the queen, I just wonder. If there's more political element to the market moves.
No, look, let's be clear. We thought about this in two kind of phases. We thought about supply chain disruption. We thought the entire impact of the global integrated economy. We looked at Asia and we said, obviously, used to be in the SARS days, we could identify and we could isolate and that this is a global economy. It's integrated. Then we adjusted the impact on the demand side of the equation. It all adds up to questioning where growth can be. And certainly, as Dan is pressing on, where can earnings be in an environment where we were arguably already facing 3 or 4 different rounds of headwinds over the last year and a half? That's what it is. And there's no question that the politics are something that have been swirling around this market for a long time. And I would have argued that they were not priced in. But it's hard for me to say that this is really all about a relief on politics when, in fact, this is all about global growth. And there's some real questions.
All right. It's a good discussion. One will continue, by the way. We're going to dive deeper into some of these surprising Super Tuesday results and take a look at the one sector that may have won bigger than Biden. Plus, they may be big dividend plays, but will they pay out for you? The desk make their picks for high-yielding names. Stock picks for you in this environment. A reminder, be sure to watch or listen to us live on the go from anywhere on the CNBC app. And we're back after this.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. Saving, researching, investing. Now you can take those investments to the next level with Yahoo Finance, our sponsor today. I have an investment account with Schwab and a 401k with Fidelity, and I use Yahoo Finance to consolidate them so it's incredibly easy to manage. They've been helping great investors like you for over 25 years. So whether you're a seasoned investor or just looking to level up, Yahoo Finance can simplify things, putting all your tools and data in one spot. Yahoo Finance takes a 360-degree look at the financial news cycle, from breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, and customizable charts. They've got you covered. You can see all of your 401k and other investments by securely linking your brokerage accounts. Yahoo Finance gives you insights and helps you see your wealth in its entirety. That big picture perspective helps smart investors become even better. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor. YahooFinance.com, the number one financial destination. YahooFinance.com. That's YahooFinance.com.
All right, welcome back to Fast Money. It has been a heck of a 24 hours for, let's call them, the triple Bs, not bonds. Biden wins big, Bernie goes block and tackle, and Bloomberg bails out. been a game-changing day in the election all around. Let's get to Kayla Tausche out west with more. Kayla.
Brian, a game-changing day in the most populous state, California, isn't even fully tallied yet. California is still too early to call with 54% of the vote in, and Sanders is leading here. But Biden's breakout night closing the distance with Sanders. Biden now has 513 total delegates, according to NBC News. Bernie is at 461. Now, the next stretch of primaries includes a slew of swing states where moderate voters will again feature prominently. In last night's exit polls, we learned only a quarter of voters said that they were very liberal, and in most states, they viewed socialism unfavorably. Mike Bloomberg was unsuccessful in his bid for those voters, and this afternoon, he gave his first public remarks after ending that 100-day, half-a-billion-dollar campaign, and he got a little emotional.
Our campaign for a better America, a stronger America, a more just America, a more equal America, and a more united America continues, and together, we will get it done. Thank you.
Part of the way he's going to do that is by endorsing former Vice President Joe Biden and pledging his resources toward that effort. But legally, Bloomberg can't give Biden his money outright. His campaign manager, Kevin Sheekey, said on MSNBC last hour that Bloomberg's operation will instead serve as a vendor, providing data, staff, and other resources in that effort. Sheekey said those resources aren't just for Biden, but for congressional seats, too. We'll see exactly how and when there is that transfer of wealth, Brian, and what exactly it does to Biden's effort, which has seen quite a surge in the last day.
Yeah, that's an understatement, I think. Kayla Tausche, Kayla, we appreciate it. Thank you very much. So that Biden bounce making the healthcare stocks and their investors feel really good today. Anthem, Centene, Humana, Cigna, all insurers posting their biggest one-day rally since 2008, Guy Adami.
Yes, sir.
But one day doth not a rally make.
No, 24 hours is not a day make, as I like to say. But UNH, for example, a name you didn't mention, but I'll throw it in with that group. In a month, this is almost a $300 billion company. Went from 270 to 305, 260 to 289 in the course of maybe 20 or so trading days. It's absurd. It's up 10% today. On a benign tape, into earnings, I still think this is a stock that, given below market multiple, give it a 17 multiple, you're talking about a stock that should be trading north of $320. I think that's where it's going. But the fact that these stocks move 10% in a day is madness. I mean, there is nothing normal about this.
Why is it madness?
You're telling me that UNH's business was 10% better today than it was. It's
complete
absurd.
And it's got to be overdone. If you think about it, they all still have a target on their back. It doesn't matter whether you're coming from the Bernie Sanders angle of what healthcare should be or the Joe Biden angle of what healthcare should be.
Well, of course,
or for that matter, what President Trump
said, he basically wanted those companies to go away.
All of these guys, it doesn't matter because they'll figure out. First of all, Sanders is not going to go win. He's not going to have undivided government. He's not going to do away with it. It's what you say on the campaign trail and what you do in the behind the seat at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. It's not going to get done. But all these companies still have a target on their back. So I would take profits when you see, to Guy's point, the stock rally like this aggressively on a single day.
Again, if you look at a lot of these stocks, and you know, the Cignas of the world were a little bit more volatile. United Healthcare, though, as Guy's talking about, this stock had been quietly and steadily heading to new highs, and in fact near highs when we got into what was seemingly a corona-inspired pullback for the entire market and for United Healthcare. But in fact, the snapback on whether it's Bernie and benign policy or not, hard to know, Biden and benign policy, all the alliteration, Brian, that now I have a lot of respect for what you were doing earlier. But the bottom line here is this is a company that's growing earnings 11-12%. We saw JP Morgan upgrade their earnings 2 weeks ago after they gave a 2020 guide that was better than expected. And that's why you stay in healthcare, because at a time when you're questioning where EPS is going to be, these are companies that actually are delivering at multiples that aren't that difficult.
Yeah, and the way to do it, I mean, the XLV, which is the whatever select ETF, you know, it's UNH, it's Johnson & Johnson's, Bristol, it's Merck. And, you know, that thing was $90 in October, and it broke out and went to 105. And just last week on Friday, it touched 90. So here we are back at 100. I mean, that's kind of the way to play this thing, especially when you consider that a lot of those pharma issues, those companies have issues on the political front, but they also have supply chain issues with China. So I think you want to kind of disperse your risk across a bunch of these these names. And obviously UNH and the move it had today really helped the XLV, but I think that's the way to play it.
All right, good conversation on a big sector there. All right, later today, check out more of today's big moves. You can go to our website at any time. In the meantime, here's what else we have coming up on Fast.
With interest rates hitting one all-time low after another, where's a trader to go if they're hunting for yield? We take a look at the stock plays with some good prospects. And later, energy ministers are gathering in Vienna ahead of tomorrow's OPEC meeting. But what do options markets expect their decision will mean for oil prices? We get some answers to that and a lot more when Fast Money returns.
The spirit of performance defines Acura, and now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation.
Cannonball!
Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.
All right, you are looking at a live shot for the White House where the coronavirus task force is holding a media briefing, obviously, Vice President Mike Pence. If they make any market-moving headlines, reference any stocks, the Regenerons, the Gileads, other world, of course, we're going to bring you that, but they are giving an update right now. In the meantime, let's turn back to today's monster day on Wall Street. The Dow up more than 1,100 points again. But over in the bond market, yields, they continue to feel pressure. The 10-year note eyeing, not hitting, but getting close to a fresh record low. So that got us thinking. If you're searching for yield, you just want some cash, right? Where can you find it? Well, maybe look to stocks because bonds aren't giving anything. And listen to this stat, which is definitely random but interesting. 71% of stocks in the S&P 500 are now yielding more than the 10-year Treasury. What's interesting? That music, but I thought it would be a lot higher than 71%.
What was it?
I think it was Gallagher, actually, if I'm right. So let's do a little yield hunting. We're looking at three sectors of the market with attractive yields, to some anyway. We're going to kick things off with the hard-hit retail sector. Names like Macy's, Kohl's, Gap, Tapestry, the former Coach, all yielding more than 5%. Tim, do you like any of them for a yield play?
That's tough. And if you look at retail, it really, I don't think, has seen much of a bounce at all. If you look at all those names, they actually traded up. Almost every one of those names, I wouldn't say Kohl's is broken, and I wouldn't say Tapestry is broken. I think Macy's certainly is broken, and I think Gap is still somewhat rudderless. So Tapestry, based upon their last round of numbers, where they actually beat and they guided on their core business, which was very respectable. Gross margins close to 67%. So you're never buying a company, I think, just for yield, because in the case of a Macy's, that's a 12% dividend yield because that stock's down 60% in the last 13 months. So I think you have to be very careful. We all know that you could one day lose that entire yield, and that's not a reason to buy a stock, in my view. Tapestry is the best all-around combination of fundamentals and a nice chunky dividend.
Tapestry is also one of the top 10 albums of all time by Carole King, without question. Yeah. I'm just throwing it out there. Don't at me, please, kids at home. But I'll say this. Kohl's, to me, might be interesting. You had a big volume day, 15% or so short interest. The stock has been grim death. But you know what? Maybe you flushed some people out on this last move. So if you're looking for a risk-reward out of those retail names, Kohl's might actually be interesting.
You don't think it's too late to get into Kohl's?
Nice. You know, you're so far away from me, Brian, it's hard for me to hear you where I'm sitting. But
nobody's
ever
said that to me. But we do have to worry, Dan. Listen, in all these names, whatever it is, and sort of to Tim's point, companies can stop paying dividends. They can cut those yields.
I mean, I think Guy's point about coal is a really interesting one. You know, at the end of 2018, the stock was trading 80. It's at 36 bucks right now. You get that dividend yield. So basically, the five-year low is down at these levels in the mid-30s, and you say to yourself, okay, is this stock going? The risk-reward is important. You have to have a view on the stock, on the fundamentals, and then if the dividend yield works, just understand that if you get the stock direction right, that yield's going to be lower.
All right, let's switch now over to energy because... obviously, a lot of very high dividend yielding names here. You got Occidental Petroleum, Schlumberger, ExxonMobil, Chevron. Steve, I'll start with you. I mean, I don't know how much more we could talk about these companies. Exxon's yield at 6.7, I think, is the highest in 30 years. Occidental may well be the highest ever. But again, there's no guarantee these companies aren't going to cut their capital spending. Although, you know, Chevron yesterday, they basically said they're going to give money back to shareholders for 5 years. But They could cut dividends.
They could cut dividends, but when I look at ExxonMobil, it's a 7% basically dividend, and then you look at it, the stock down 25% year to date. So in theory, I disagree with the game because I'd never buy something just for the yield because you can give it away in 1 day or 2 days, bad price action. And I don't believe the energy space is ripe with any type of bargains. I think we're oversupplied. I think there's a glut of energy, and I think you have to see the overall commodity start to level off first and bounce considerably from here before the subsector is actually
buying. Okay, and I get it. Listen, OPEC is meeting tomorrow and Friday. We did something on Power Lunch and that, but Tim, this is for you. You ready?
I hope so.
Because I wonder if this is, in all seriousness, maybe the sign of a bottom. Jefferies, the investment bank today, said they are done. They're giving up completely on energy and... worse, they compared the group with the 1962 Metropolitans.
Look at that.
The worst baseball.
Now you told me
literally,
you
Jeffrey
surprise
said
for me
energy
today,
so now, is the 62.
We're
Mets.
Now a metaphor for the ultimate in futility. Okay, you know, you could do that. And by the way, Vegas says 86 wins over under. I'm taking the over. And Cespedes, I think, is actually those heels after the wild boar accident are still working. But let's get back to energy. When you're talking about now sub 4% in terms of the weighting of the energy sector in the S&P, and it was used at its peak, it was somewhere close to 17, you get why they don't need to be in the space. And to quote our friend, something inside has died. And there's no hiding from the fact that the energy sector has been a widowmaker for a lot of people. Having said all that, you talked about Chevron. I think this is one of the most capital disciplined integrated oil companies in the world at a time when rates are zero. These guys will be paying that dividend till the end of time.
They never gave it up, even in the worst time. John Watson, the then CEO.
I can own Chevron here.
Schlumberger, quickly.
I think you got to break 30 on the upside. You buy it on a breakout. Okay. The most interesting one in that group is Oxy. That's the most levered. Had some huge volume days over the last couple weeks.
Yeah, it certainly has. And they owe Buffett some money, too, by the way. All right, let's round things out with the consumer. Names like Kraft Heinz, General Mills, Molson Coors, and Coty, the makeup company. Again, all offering some pretty dividends. Dan, you got... you know, look at Kraft Heinz at 6.2, General Mills at 4%. Any of these look attractive?
Yeah, I would just say, General Mills over a Kraft Heinz. We know there's a lot of issues there. I don't think you want to kind of dip your toe into the names that have these really structural issues here. So General Mills, you know, we know those staples work okay. They get a little expensive.
We're not referring to Jeff Mills, a.k.a. General.
Yeah, we love Jeff.
Right.
You Penn Quaker.
Hi, Jeff.
Play the cross.
Yeah, play lax. 10 years ago. So I just think you avoid Kraft Heinz. I just don't know why you're involved in that.
The only issue with General Mills, I like it. That would be my pick out of this group as well, is that you did have the run when people are stockpiling. This is a packaged food company. So people are going out to stores. They're buying ahead. They're buying water. They're buying cleaning products. They're buying the stuff
that General Mills makes.
Yeah. So you might want to wait a little bit until the fever kind of breaks on the virus and see where the stock is then before you go hunting for the yield.
All right, coming up, the one name that investors have been piling into as the coronavirus spreads, and it is tanking in the after hours. They just reported their results. There's the chart. We're going to give you the updated trade and the name and what they said coming up. And later on, five big stocks, five big upgrades, called a lightning round on some of Wall Street's biggest calls that you might have missed today. Because, by the way, the Dow was up 1,100 points. The Mets will lose more than 75.
Why do that? Why do
We're
you
back
have,
after
I mean,
this.
Why?
You know? All right, welcome back. We have got an earnings alert. It is a stock that we told you about before the break, teased, if you will. It is Zoom Video. The stock is down after hours, but far less than it had been. Deirdre Bose out in San Francisco. This was probably the premier coronavirus bull play. It fell big after hours, but it's come way back. What did they say about the quarter?
Yeah, that's right, Brian. Consider it the hottest coronavirus trade, up some 70% this year. So it was priced for more than perfection. And even though it delivered better than expected numbers on every metric, I repeat, the stock is up 70% this year in just a few months. Now, it's been on a tear as company schools and conferences go remote to prevent further impact from coronavirus. According to one estimate, Zoom added more users so far this year than it did in all of 2019. But those big gains have made shares significantly more expensive on a price-to-sales ratio than other premium cloud plays like the ones you see here, Coupa, Zscaler, Datadog, and Workday. So some, like analysts at Goldman and Morgan Stanley, have put out notes suggesting that Zoom has maybe gotten over its skis a little bit. But while Zoom has been adding users, keep in mind that costs, they may also be rising. Although we don't see that yet in the results, the company lifted limits for free users in China, and it says it's monitoring servers to, quote, ensure maximum reliability. That could cost money. But still, guys, shares have pared their losses. They were down as much as 10% after the results. Now they're down just about 4% in extended trade. Brian, that call is just kicking off, and CEO and founder Eric Yuan is talking. So the Q&A portion is still coming up, probably in about 20 minutes. We'll be listening.
All right, Deirdre Bosa, thank you very much. I mean, Dan, this has been, you know, bang, Zoom to the moon. Is any of this real buying or just, hey, what's the coronavirus play? Buy that stock. Don't even care what they do.
I think there's a scarcity to the obvious plays that'll be. This is a secular trend that's happening. They have a great product. I would say this about the 2019 IPOs. When this company came out, what was unique about it, on an adjusted basis, they were profitable. So that was one of the things where investors were kind of overlooking some of the high valuations. But Deirdre kind of nailed it at 30, 35 times sales. It's a really tough name to get your arm around, even though they are a bit profitable. So that 65% gain since the end of January, when the coronavirus really started to become a thing in the markets, you got to think that there's a lot in there for that. So this is one I think all of us felt when this stock was like $60 or whatever. This was a unique tech story, especially out of that 2019 IPO crop. I don't think we can say that right here.
Okay. More. Coming up, we're going to talk banks, bullseyes, and burritos. Mm. It is the five big analyst calls hitting the street today. We're all about the alliteration. All right. And later on, we spotted a big bet in the options market ahead of tomorrow's OPEC meeting. OPEC options, options action. Mm. Tim,
love
this, by the way, our special
Friday,
coverage.
5:30.
Special coverage tonight. Markets in turmoil. 1,100-point gain for the Dow, but not everything is all clear. 7 o'clock tonight. Don't miss it again. We're back after this. All right, we're going to call this the top five at five, or maybe not. I think that's taken. Five big calls from five big analyst notes hitting the street today. Let's call it the Fast Five, shall we? Let's kick things off. Here you go. Morgan Stanley upgraded to a buy at Citibank. So Citi upgrading Morgan Stanley, calls it a quality franchise on sale, guy.
Quality franchise on sale. I actually like this upgrade only because, yeah, that massive double top that we talked about, the stock cratered. Tested levels we saw, you know, probably within the last 6 months, seemingly held. So if you want to play stock market, it makes sense. I still don't love the banks, but at least Morgan Stanley gives you something to trade against, Brian.
All right, next up, Wells Fargo upgrading Chipotle to overweight. The analysts bullish on the restaurant's Chipotlane drive-through expansion. They say that this could be, Steve Grasso, the dominoes of this decade.
Yeah, I agree with that. And Chipotle's found a way to do a lot of things right. But I also believe that coronavirus has affected it. When you see the stock sell off, it's below all its moving averages. The 200 is at $800. Just keep an eye on 700 and 800. You're in no man's land here, but I do like it.
Side question, wouldn't restaurants with drive-throughs benefit if people are afraid of coming?
Still got people hacking over your food that are making it.
They're not hacking. They are not hacking.
I'm not sure that's,
there are a lot of hardworking people.
I'm not sure that that's what he meant. Yes. As far as, I mean, it's exactly not a Chipotle thing. It's just a general comment.
General comment.
All right, moving on to Target. Goldman Sachs adding the retailer's conviction buy list, saying it stands to benefit from competitors, stores, closures. Tim, do you like this call?
Well, I think it's a good call in terms of they are operating with a lot of efficiency. If you look at actually their holiday numbers, they were in a plus to
7% up, up 13% for the year. The stock had a massive run. It has pulled back. So in terms of their execution, I think it's been very strong. I think we are overstored in terms of the big box. I think you do need to see that. I think it's fiercely competitive, especially in their food. But on this pullback, Target looks interesting.
Oh, well, speaking of big box stores, let's move on to the next call. Another retail name, Home Depot. They also got an upgrade to a buy from a neutral at Nomura Instinet. The analyst saying it can benefit from a strong housing market as well, Guy Adami, that people may nest due to the virus impact. Stay home, spend money, not travel.
Go get your gardening supplies. Get out there in the spring, dig in the earth, which I happen to love to do. Listen, a lot of reasons like Home Depot. I don't think valuation is one of them. That's what they cited. But you know what? I don't think it's particularly expensive at 21 and a half times. I think 250 is the price target. I do think it gets there.
I'm long Home Depot. I really like the stock. It's basically at all-time highs. It's come all the way back, and I think lower rates and just a snapback. But that's not the this virus is not the reason to go buy Home Depot. I mean, you know, just like hurricanes, when people are going to buy more masking tape and plywood is not the reason to buy Home Depot. So buy it because it's a duopoly, because they're a lot better in terms of their operational efficiency than Lowe's.
All right, good stuff there. By the way, the Indigo Girls, you got to tend the earth if you want a rose off Hammer and Nail. Last but not least, Oracle upgraded to buy at Societe Generale, saying this stock is a good defensive bet against coronavirus. Dan, what do you think of this one?
I don't know how you attach those two things if you're going to say the secular shift towards the cloud, the recurring nature of a lot of their revenues, but this is not a particularly exciting company right now. The last couple quarters, this is even before the virus came around, were disappointing with guides lower. And I'll just make one other point. The 52-week high came last July. So, you know, the market just topped off from an all-time high just a week and a half ago. And this thing is, you know, 6 to 8 months from its all-time highs. I think it's a bit of a value trap here, so I'm not buying it.
All right, good stuff there with the Fast Five. All right, coming up, a big bet in the options market, all out of tomorrow's critical OPEC meeting. We're going to drill down on that call ahead. But first, here's a look at the Cramer Cam. Jim is chatting with Dollar Tree's CEO. That stock also under pressure, like pretty much every retailer this year. What could it take to turn it around? You're going to find out, of course, the top of the hour in Mad Money. We're not done, though, yet. We're at the NASDAQ in Times Square. We're back after this. All right, welcome back. Oil giving back a little bit of what it gained yesterday ahead of tomorrow's critical OPEC meeting, where the market is hoping a major supply cut could be announced, maybe a million plus barrels on top of what they're already doing. Crude prices have already tumbled nearly 25% this year, of course, due in part to coronavirus, global economic slowdowns, and just too much doggone oil everywhere. Meantime, over in the options market, you've got one trader who is throwing down a multi-million dollar bet that the crude collapse is not anywhere near being over. Mike Coe's in San Francisco with what they're betting on. Mike.
Yeah, so we're looking today at the WTI oil futures contract options. What we saw today was that puts out traded calls by about 2 to 1. Usually they're about even. And on top of all of that, they also represented the five most active options. The trade we were looking at was the June 34-29 put spread. This morning, over 11,000 of those had traded, and by the end of the day, over 12,000 of them traded. Those are making bearish bets that the June futures contract could drop below 34 by June expiration. That would be a significant decline from where the June future was trading today. That was about $47. And this trade, which cost a little over $2 million in total premium, would be worth about $55 million if it did get down to that lower level, although let's point out that's probably a fairly low probability bet. What we can also see is that the implied volatility for oil futures options right now is extremely elevated. And what this chart isn't showing us is how much the puts are actually bid. So definitely seeing some bearish activity despite the big declines that we've seen.
That's incredible. And I just asked Dan, I think my mic was up actually, Mike, so thank you very much. Is that somebody just trying to waste $2 million or is that because it's a low probability bet? I mean, you have to be super bearish or, to your point, is it a hedge?
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's hitting levels we haven't seen in a long time. I think the fundamentals are different than they were at the lows back in 2016. Obviously, this unknowable thing about global growth. So you're seeing a lot of different activity. It could be speculative, could be a hedge.
2016, the low was around $42. 2017, both of these were in summers. One was in August, one was in June or so. Then it was a 2018 low in December, around $42. OPEC has become less and less relevant. We've seen the stock market, or the oil market, I should say, move less and less based on geopolitical fears. So if it does break down, and we do see it break down below that 42 mark, this thing could head to lower 30s really, really precipitously.
Well, if Libya comes, so I'm usually there at the OPEC meetings, but we didn't go for a lot of reasons. There's no media allowed, by the way, at this event. They're keeping them at a hotel ways away. They don't want the media anywhere near them. If you don't get a million barrels a day cut, you're probably going to see a big slide in oil, are you not?
I actually think OPEC has done a pretty extraordinary job over the last 18 months. I think oil is all about supply. I think it's all about what's been going on in terms of the non-conventional that's come out of the U.S., the other alternative fuels that have come online, and OPEC has had to reel it in. By the way, there's no question that Biden is helpful to the energy sector. So that's another dynamic here which may relieve some of the pressure.
All right, guys, thank you very much. In the meantime, we got some headlines crossing right now, called breaking news, if you wish, from St. Louis Fed Bank President Jim Bullard. He says he is optimistic the United States can handle the coronavirus outbreak. But the bigger headline, I think he made just a moment ago, he says that the Fed needs more data to justify further rate cuts. Remember, the Fed meets 2 weeks from now, March 18th, I think it is, guys. And based on Fed funds futures, it's pretty much like a 100% chance, Guy, that there's going to be another rate cut. But Bullard's saying, got to see more data.
Well, I mean, you know my views on the Fed. I mean, yes, they need to see more data. They're following the rest of the world down this rabbit hole because somehow we're supposed to be leaders to negative rates instead of followers. The whole thing is absolute madness. Again, the market seems to like it, which is great. That's the role of this whole thing in the first place. Tim has alluded to that many times. But you know what? At a certain point, you got to pay the piper. And we are precariously close to that point.
All right. On that happy note, we're going to leave it there, go to a break, and come back with your final trades. All right, time now for your final trades. Tim, please kick it off.
If you were waiting for an opportunity to buy Home Depot, you missed it. But it's a great long-term story, and I do think that the fundamentals warrant owning it here.
Grasso.
Snapchat. The stock went down $4, basically, on coronavirus. I don't see it. Bye.
No relationship, Dan.
JetBlue got nailed in the last month, down 30%. I think it's trying to find a bottom here at 15. I like it here.
Guy down.
We've done this show for over 13 years. The first time the Indigo Girls ever been mentioned, thankfully, Brian, because I can't name an Indigo Girl song. That said, the snapback rallies in energy are going to be fierce. I think Oxy's due for one.
Thank you, Galileo. Yeah. Guy Adami. Thanks for watching Fast Money. Matt, with Jim Cramer starts right now. We'll see you tomorrow night.
Great cover of CJ.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.